Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it.
The Debatables
on Dash Radio, part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network.
Jimmy starts the drive, step back in the air.
Oh, happy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time plays.
Woo! Butler.
Talking about the Chicago Bulls and NBA.
Your best source for coverage from the Madhouse on Madison.
The ceiling is the roof.
In one corner, host Jordan Malley.
His talk about patience with this team and his talk about direction, he says that the level of patience needs to come with fans and that this thing can't happen overnight. Well, obviously it can't happen overnight, but where have we gone in the last 3 years that says that we have any type of future?
And in the other corner, co-host Matt Peck.
But there are plenty of people out there in Bulls fandom who might look at that potential playoff matchup and say, hey, they can upset the one or the two seed. Maybe they'll get to the conference finals. Maybe they'll get to the finals. There are Bulls fans out there dumb enough to believe that. If you consider yourself one of that population, I say for shame, wake the fuck up. But those people, those Bulls fans do exist.
Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Like looking, finds Rose. Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer!
Kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
That's our goal, to get younger, at positions, to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
The Debatables starts now on Dash Radio.
What's up and welcome into the Debatables, brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. We're live here on Dash Radio. My name is Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Debatables and all of our content at almightyballer.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Debatables, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. So on our last episode, we kind of touched on some conspiracy theories, talked a little fun about the NBA lottery, but now, as we know it, the picks are in. We know the slots where everyone's being drafted, where teams will pick in the draft. So obviously, first and foremost, Celtics getting the number one pick was huge. The Lakers are number two. The Sixers get the number three pick, and Phoenix gets the number four pick, so kind of rounding out the top four there. Pretty much, there was no real surprises, I thought. What did you think, Matt? I didn't think there's any surprises where these teams landed.
No, it's odd. There has been a very recent history. This was the third straight year where the team with the best odds at number one actually got number one. And before that, you know, dating back to 2014 and beyond, going back further into history, it was, you know, there was awful luck with a team that had the best odds not actually getting that number one pick. So now this is the third straight year that the team with the best odds got it. And I mean, it was so disgusting. There was instantly, as soon as it was Boston 1 and Lakers 2, all of that talk that we had in our previous episode, Jordan, about, oh, it's rigged and they want the big market teams to get the franchise player. All of that shit came flooding back to the forefront. I was like, okay, well, yeah, but they did have the best odds. Like, come on now.
Right. And I, you know what? I think the biggest, the biggest thing is the 76ers getting the three pick in the number three slot instead of the number two. But as we talked on the last episode, I don't think it really matters, because whether the Lakers were going to pick two or three, I think they were still going to take Lonzo Ball. And I don't know how much of an interest the 76ers really had in Lonzo Ball, just because of all the talk about how he only wanted to play for the Lakers, all this LeVar Ball stuff. So for me, I feel like the 76ers are probably looking elsewhere anyway, and this kind of just reassures it now that, you know, obviously they don't have to think about whether or not taking a Ball.
Right. And honestly, assuming now that the Lakers take Lonzo at two, I'm sure that the 76ers are going to be more than happy to take Josh Jackson at three, because people were talking about them taking Josh Jackson if they had the number two pick, taking him over Lonzo Ball. So they get their guy that they want, most likely. And You know, it's really interesting. I'm really curious to see what this Philly team can do. Obviously, Joel Embiid was there being their representative at the draft lottery on Tuesday night. Seeing what he did in his, 30 or some games where he was nearing averaging 20 and 10. And hopefully you have a resurgent second season for Ben Simmons, who they took with another recent high lottery pick. I mean, that 76ers team, not quite where the Celtics are as far as teams that just kind of rebuild on the fly. Obviously, it took longer for the 76ers, but if they add Josh Jackson to that young core that they have now, they can turn things around pretty quickly in Philadelphia.
It's crazy. I can't believe it. And even with all the injuries and how long that they have had to wait, and some people were dragging them across Twitter, saying that, you know, because they did this, you know, whole trust the process, let's tank until we get the best players and stockpile picks. Well, they only got one number one draft pick in the last 4 years. So some people are saying that this tank is a failure. You know, I don't care wherever you're picking between one through five. I mean, you're still pretty much guaranteed to have a player that's going to contribute unless it's a total bust. And those are more far and few between than actually landing a guy that can be a contributing player. So it's interesting. 76ers, too. I think Phoenix was the biggest loser. They were probably ones that wanted to sneak up into the top three. And then when they were called at number four, sort of a disappointment for them.
Yeah, and of course, nobody outside of Phoenix really has any sympathy. Like, nobody cares. This is what people have been talking about. They're a smaller market team, and everybody, as far as the NBA landscape of big market teams being relevant, I guess you could say to that degree, also, people were kind of disappointed that the Knicks didn't get any luck because people desperately want them to be relevant again. Who knows what the heck they're going to do with Carmelo Anthony, but with Kristaps Porzingis and some younger pieces, they actually fell one spot from where they were projected. So more love lost, I think, for the Knicks as far as the NBA as a whole is concerned. And Phoenix, I still am optimistic about that team. They've got a lot. I mean, Devin Booker is a stud. I really like Dragan Bender's NBA potential. And, you know, like they have a lot of good pieces. Tyler Ulis, Marquise Chris. You know, they had, you know, two first-round picks last season. They have a good young core. They can still add to that with a guy at number four.
You named all the players right off the top of my head, like, the guys that I think that could be future players for this team. And I like this core that Phoenix has. And I guess I was going to save this for a little bit later in the show, but I guess we'll start with this. So there's been a lot of talk now in the last 24 hours. I think it's gained more traction nationally, sort of knowing where the Celtics are going to pick and where everyone else is going to pick. Obviously, the Celtics landing the number one pick. There's been more traction on the Jimmy Butler and Paul George front, and now it's comparison between Paul George and Jimmy Butler. Who's the better grab and who could potentially fit where? And there's two teams, obviously the Celtics being the first one, but the Suns are another team that I heard now that could be interested in Butler's services, and they've got the package that maybe the Bulls are looking for if they are trying to get younger and more athletic. So let's start with the Celtics. Let's take this in for account that that Butler is on the table and that there's two, three, four teams maybe involved in a trade here. So obviously we've repeated it before. The Celtics back in February at the deadline, they offered a package to the Bulls that the Bulls turned down because, well, they didn't obviously know that where the pick was going. But my first question off the top of my head is, now looking back at it, did the Bulls pass up the most value that they might get for Jimmy Butler as far as trading with Boston, or are they still sort of sitting in the same conversation that they were a few months ago?
Honestly, I think they already passed up the best offer that they could have gotten for Butler, and it was a package from Boston, and the thing that always made this a stalled talk and a non-starter between Chicago and Boston is that the Bulls wanted that 2017 pick owed to Boston from Brooklyn, and they wanted that pick unprotected. And Danny Ainge and the Celtics were not willing to put that Brooklyn pick in this upcoming draft into any Butler trade package without a protection attached to it. So now you fast forward to the present, and they know that that is a number one pick. To me, the Celtics aren't going to trade that pick for Jimmy Butler. I mean, the only scenario I can see that happening is if the Celtics get really close in this upcoming Eastern Conference Finals and fall short to the Cavs. Say they push the Cavs 7 games, which I don't think is likely. And they think, you know what? Actually, maybe adding Jimmy Butler right now for next season is all we need to knock off LeBron and the Cavs. And maybe we'll sacrifice one pick in 2017, but we have more lottery picks right around the corner from those amazing trades that they pulled off while they were doing their quick rebuild. So that, to me, is the only hypothetical where this Bulls-Celtics trade with Jimmy Butler actually happens, because other than that being the case, if the Celtics get steamrolled by Cleveland and say, we're still not quite there, they much rather have a number one pick than an aging Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I think if you're hoping that Jimmy Butler is going to be on the table this summer, I think Bulls fans have to root for the Celtics in some part in this playoffs, because you want the Celtics to take the Cavaliers to, say, like you said, game seven. I think even if the Celtics take them to a game six, I think if it gets to 6 games and the Celtics are in every single one of these games, that's going to push their front office with more pressure to say, you know what, maybe we are that close. Maybe we're that close to this Cavaliers team now. I think that's going to be a big deterrent. But if they go and get swept by Cleveland and get blown out in every game, I don't think the Celtics are going to be as willing to go out and get that piece. But in the same token, too, the Celtics, if you're this good now, and you were the first team in the Eastern Conference in the regular season, and you've got players like Isaiah Thomas and other young pieces that you drafted high, and you're supposed to be this team that's battling for the Eastern Conference, why not go get Jimmy right now? Like, why stockpile these 19 and 20-year-olds if they're not going to be any good for 3, 4, 5 seasons? They're not going to make that type of impact. So I guess in a way, the Celtics have to kind of figure out whether or not they're going to really push for this, or they're going to kind of sit back and wait for the day that LeBron, you know, turns that corner. And we could be waiting, like we said on the last episode, we could be waiting 5, 7 years for LeBron to do that. And does the Celtics organization look at themselves and say, do we really want to wait that long? And I don't know. That's a question for the Celtics front office to answer.
I mean, yes, they do have to face that question. But Jordan, if you zoom out a little bit further than the next season and the season following, if you're talking about bringing in Jimmy Butler for the 2 remaining years of his contract, at least bring him in if you're the Celtics. Yeah, maybe adding Butler to the team they have right now gets them to contend more evenly with LeBron and the Cavs. Maybe somehow they knock them off if they play their best and Cleveland has an off series, then you still got to face whichever amazing team comes out of the West. You assuming that the Warriors are still the Warriors, the Spurs, Kawhi comes back healthy, Tony Parker plays another season, are still the Spurs. The Rockets are all, you know, of course, going to be a factor again. There's no guarantee that even if you get past the Cavs, that you're going to be raising the title after facing a Western Conference foe. At the same time, think about the fact that if they do wait and say, we actually, what we want is a core that is young, that will all be peaking and still getting good veteran years from guys we have on our roster right now, when LeBron is finished with his reign, then you're talking about a Celtics team that could theoretically be dominating the Eastern Conference for a decade. And this is, remember, this is the Boston Celtics. This is a team that is about championships. This is a team that is about dynasties. They're not just thinking about maybe knocking off LeBron once in the next 2 years to get a chance at a title. Danny Ainge is trying to orchestrate and build the next Celtics dynasty. That's what I'm thinking about.
I agree with you in that, with the Celtics, and I'm going to jump on your point right away. If the Celtics are about championships, if they're about rings, and they're about sort of this dynasty that you're talking about, well, for me, then I look at the Celtics team, then what are you doing with Isaiah Thomas? When in the same token, if you know you can't get past LeBron, and they prove it this week coming up and in this series, don't you have to start sitting there asking yourself these questions? Like, we've got pieces that are good right now, and this team is good enough to be a top number one team in the Eastern Conference, but you're not getting past LeBron. So to me, then are the Celtics going to try and set themselves back even more? Or do they go and say go sign Gordon Hayward this summer and add another piece to there? And do you think if they brought Gordon Hayward in and then maybe even did trade for Jimmy Butler, are they that much closer to beating LeBron continuously? Because then you have all those pieces. You have Isaiah Thomas in his prime. You have Jimmy Butler in his prime. And you have a good, really good player in Gordon Hayward in his prime. So is that something that the Celtics consider too? I mean, I don't know. Like, it's very questionable at this point because
it's just hard to answer, Jordan, because we haven't seen anybody knock LeBron. This is assuming Cleveland wins. This is going to be what, LeBron's seventh straight finals appearance coming out of the Eastern Conference. Nobody, whether he was in Cleveland, whether he was in Miami, nobody has been able to knock off LeBron and the Cavs or LeBron and the Heat in the East for what has been what's close to a decade now. So, yeah, I mean, this Celtics team as is and adding to it Jimmy Butler and or Paul George and or Gordon Hayward sounds like obviously clear and away the second best team in the East. But are they good enough to beat LeBron and whoever is playing with LeBron? Because we have no recent evidence that that is even remotely possible.
How long do you think Celtics fans are willing to wait to, you know, eventually return back to the NBA Finals? I mean, I'm just
give me a break. They can wait for a while. They still have the Patriots. Screw Boston fans.
I'm with you. Okay, I get that. But at the, like, you got to think about it with Boston and their successful, you know, history of winning in other organizations. There, it's a winning city. It's like Chicago. I mean, Chicago's a winning city for the most part, and in recently it has been too. So we have certain standards here in Chicago that we hold teams to, and I feel like in the same token, the Boston Celtics fans and Boston fans in general are holding this team to an accountability. So I know from a business side and like a basketball mindset that it would be smart to continue to stockpile these young guys, but at the same time, you've got to ask yourself, what are these fans waiting? Like, how long are these fans willing to wait in order to get back to the top consistently and consistently return to the NBA Finals? Are you willing to tell your fans, you know, we're going to stick it out for another 3 or 4 years, build our young players up and try and get past LeBron at that point when maybe he is 36, 37 years old? Or do you say, you know what, we're all in right now and we're going to go at it right now. We've got enough pieces here where we think if we add one or two more that, you know, we can maybe press LeBron. And I think those questions will maybe be more clearly answered once we see kind of how this series unfolds.
Yeah, I think obviously that's going to be a very important factor for how Danny Ainge and his staff look at their plans for this summer, is how close they get to knocking off the Cavs. Because obviously that will tell them which direction they need to go if they really do think adding one big name, adding one star to this roster as is enough to get them over that hump, or if they would rather stockpile more youth for the long-term future. And those are two clear-cut options, and Danny Ainge has the luxury of choosing between those two options, both of which are pretty great. I don't think Danny Ainge is on any kind of hot seat right now, because there is the distraction of Boston being a winning city with their other teams. You know, they have the Pats, they have the Sox. At the same time, it only took him, what, 4 seasons to do this quick rebuild and get them back? The Celtics, the old Celtics, the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Rondo Celtics were in the Eastern Conference Finals just, what, 5 years ago, 2012? This rebuild happened so quickly and successfully for them, I don't think he needs to panic about making this decision one way or the other. Either way he goes, I think Celtics fans know long-term they're going to be sitting pretty.
So how this relates to the Bulls, say that Boston's willing to trade with the Bulls and they want to get Jimmy Butler. What do you have to have in order for the Bulls to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do this? What is a must have in this trade package that you need from Boston?
If you're the Bulls?
Yes.
I mean, it's a non-starter, Jordan. What they need, what they want, is that number one pick. And when they were trying to get that pick from Boston a year ago, but leading up to the draft and also during leading up to last season's NBA trade deadline, the Celtics were not willing to put that in their trade package without the protection. Now we know it's a number one pick. The Celtics, if they weren't willing to put it in a package not knowing whether or not it would be a number one pick, now they know, why would they package it? And that, of course, goes back to our one hang-up, our one hypothetical of, unless Danny Ainge thinks that Jimmy Butler can really get this Celtics team past LeBron right now, a.k.a. next season. But other than, I mean, if that number one pick isn't in there, the Bulls aren't making the trade.
So say the number one pick is on the table. What else do you have to have with this Celtics team? For me, I say you got to have the number one pick in this year. They have to package Jaylen Brown with it. I want another young guy that they took high that you can develop a younger athletic player. And then for me, it's going to have to be either Crowder or Bradley. I mean, if you say you do bring in Jimmy Butler, it makes sense that they would take Avery Bradley in return. And it's the same thing with going back to the possibility of what they do in free agency. They've got money to spend, so maybe going after another higher player would be of interest for them, so they would get rid of some of this salary cap room. But I've got to have one of those two guys. I got to have Avery Bradley, or I got to have Jay Crowder. And then I don't really care who the third player is, a throw-in. I don't know. People talked about Marcus Smart, but I don't know how well that will play over with Bulls fans if he comes here, with the recent history he's had with this town, and some of the players on the Bulls. But I don't really care who they package in that third place, but I've got to have the number one pick, and I must have Jaylen Brown. And then you could throw in Crowder and Bradley, and I don't care who else. But those first two are a must have for me.
I mean, Jordan, you might as well be talking about unicorns and, you know, fairy dust right now. Are you kidding me? Look, you're talking from the perspective of the Bulls front office, and that's kind of what they were demanding a year ago. They wanted the pick. They wanted a handful of young role players with upside who could also contribute right now. And those are the kind of the guys you're talking about when you talk about their rookie from this past season, Jaylen Brown, talking about maybe Crowder or Avery Bradley, somebody like that, maybe Marcus Smart. Those were all of the names that we were hearing in all this trade speculation a year ago. But that was such a huge Kings ransom that I feel like the Celtics were nowhere close to offering all of that. Now we're saying they're probably almost certainly not going to offer the number one pick, and then adding two or even, my God, three players on top of that? Like, there is no way the Celtics would give the Bulls that much for Jimmy Butler. No way. But at the same time, that's what the Bulls seem to be demanding. So that's why I think that there is just next to 0% chance that this happens.
And see, like, I'm not trading Jimmy Butler away if I'm not getting that value for him. I mean, if he is considered a top 15 player, a top 20 player in this league, then that's the value for him. Like, we're not giving Jimmy Butler away for free just because, you know, because we were a 500 team this year and barely squeaked in the playoffs. Like, if that's a franchise turning player that you bring in and he turns your team into a next level type of team, then there has to be obvious value there. Like, with the Celtics, for me, and the laughable part for this is you said that, like, the Bulls, you know, that number one pick wasn't on the table. Well, I remember listening to Zach Lowe right at the trade deadline, listening to his podcast, and he had Brian Windhorst and a couple other writers on there and said that the Bulls, the number one pick was on the table, that the Bulls wanted core pieces to the Celtics roster. And that included, like, Kelly Olynyk and Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder, and they wanted all of these guys instead of the picks. So that makes absolutely no sense then. So the Bulls aren't even looking at the direction that would make sense for this team if they were really trying to pick apart the Celtics team in order to dump Jimmy Butler. So I, like, at that point too, I don't get that either. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Look, I know for the most part, Zach Lowe is a great basketball guy and a great mind, and he knows what he's talking about. But when I heard those reports that you're alluding to, I didn't buy that for a second. Like, yes, the Bulls front office is dumb, but they're not dumb enough to say, we don't want your draft pick. We don't want your lottery pick.
I don't know.
We want a couple of,
I mean,
middle of the road role players. Like, come on. Like, have you seen Jay Crowder in these playoffs? The guy looks useless. I don't know how they valued him so highly, because we also heard that it was not necessarily a pick that the Bulls were demanding in a Butler trade, but that they demanded Crowder back. You know, like, those two Marquette former teammates were at the crux of the trade. But I mean, come on! Compared to Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder looks useless in these playoffs.
We're talking about a front office that's high on Cameron Payne, so I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them right now. All right. So I think we've spent enough time on the Celtics here talking about a trade opportunity. So I did see something else interesting too. We talked about the Lakers in a possible trade scenario had they landed that number one pick. Okay. That obviously didn't happen. It looks like they're going to take Lonzo at number two. There's been some talk about maybe the Bulls using Butler as a trade piece to try and go get, you know, D'Angelo Russell and maybe some other those young pieces on the Lakers. But once again, I think if you're going after this, if you're going to trade Jimmy Butler, you need draft picks. And so whether or not the Lakers would be committed to giving the Bulls their number one draft pick in 2018 or beyond is, in a sense, kind of useless for me, because you're adding a Jimmy Butler to that Lakers team. And then you're probably going to end up with not with a top five pick. You're probably going to end up with something more like a top 10 pick, 11 through 14. I don't know, with some of the other talent that they've got on this team. So we didn't talk much about that, though. So what do you make of this D'Angelo Russell maybe being a package and a point guard if they do take Lonzo Ball, maybe going to the Bulls? We didn't really touch on that.
Obviously, I think that any Bulls-Lakers trade would be the Lakers sending the Bulls a collection of young talent as opposed to their number two pick, because the Lakers are keeping that pick. Magic Johnson said, if we make it into the top three to keep that pick, we're taking it. So, I mean, that's sort of a foregone conclusion. So if the Lakers are sitting there thinking, okay, well, now we're really excited about bringing in Lonzo Ball to be the, you know, the oversized point guard floor general for the future, sort of Magic Johnson-esque, then you don't really have a need for D'Angelo Russell anymore. So maybe you try to package him, send him somewhere. And hey, if you add Jimmy Butler to a Lakers team that has a rookie Lonzo Ball, that has high expectations and playing a lot, has Brandon Ingram, has Larry Nance Jr., decent guy for your front court, Julius Randle, another lottery pick from recent seasons. Like that's could be bringing the Lakers at least back to playoff relevance, maybe. At the same time, they really screwed themselves with those contracts to Mozgov and Luol Deng last summer. I mean, those contracts are disgusting. So they don't have a whole lot of flexibility. So if the Lakers are going to make a move and make a big splash trade as opposed to just playing it safe and taking Lonzo Ball, again, I have trouble coming up with a trade that benefits the Lakers and the Bulls in a way that both teams are happy with it.
Yeah, I think with the Bulls, you have to look at some of the young core of this team, of the Lakers team, and you've got to see.
Like, would you be really that excited about bringing D'Angelo Russell to the Bulls? I don't think he's that good.
I'd be excited if it was paired with somebody else. Like, I know that they're not going to give him up, but like somebody like Brandon Ingram or Julius Randle, I mean, I'd be okay with that if that's where the conversation started, where it's, all right, we want Jimmy Butler, and we're going to start the conversation with D'Angelo Russell and say Julius Randle. I'm cool with that. Like, I'm cool with starting with that. But then you get to the talk about trying to match contracts, and that's where the Lakers might start to play you with a whole try to dump Timothy Mozgov or Luol Deng back on the Bulls to try to match those salaries.
And we just finished the Luol Deng trade on draft night Tuesday. We just now moved past that.
And that's where kind of I fall into a mix of, all right, do we really want those extended contracts on the Bulls? I mean, they talked about flexibility. So that's kind of where the stopper goes, is because the Bulls talked so much about flexibility, I can't really see a deal being done the same way that you can't see a deal being done. Mine more so because of the flexibility rather than the talent that would be coming back. So that one, interesting, but I don't think there's too much traction there. Another one that Nick Friedel from ESPN 1000 said that the number four pick in Phoenix is an interesting place for the Bulls to keep an eye on, and that might be interested in Jimmy Butler. What do you think about that one?
That one is tricky because of all of the potential Butler suitors, this one seems most likely now, more likely than the Lakers, more likely than Boston, because you know the Suns got kind of screwed in this lottery, and there's you know, there's still a ton of talent in those top five picks. Like the Suns, if they want to keep that number four pick, can get somebody great, and they'll have a variety of options. As far as, you know, Fultz and Lonzo will be gone, but they could still take De'Aaron Fox, maybe, if he's there. They could still take, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. They could still take a big, one of the best bigs on the board. They could go a lot of different directions. Does adding Jimmy Butler to Devin Booker and their young core of Bender and Marquise Chris, does that make them immediate playoff contenders next year? I'm not so sure about that. Would they rather keep the pick and add another young piece to go along with this very young team that they have right now? And then from the Bulls' perspective, is a number four pick, when really what you want is that point guard of the future, that Markelle Fultz can score in a variety of ways and create a variety of shots for him and his teammates, that's the guy you want. He's not going to be there at four. Do the Bulls have any faith that taking a pick at four is going to be a guy who's better than Jimmy Butler? I don't see that.
A lot of people are saying, though, that Jason Tatum could be the best pick in this draft, you know? Even though he is going number four, some people are saying that he could be the best NBA pro out of this draft so far, out of this top five. And so that may be something else to look at. I mean, he's only 19, 6'8", 6'11 wingspan, can shoot it, can rebound it, very athletic. So that might be something. But you touched on a couple players, Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. I think in a Bulls trade, in a scenario, one of those guys has got to be coming with that pick. I mean, if and more. The only problem I have that I run into this is there either has to be, if we're going to take on a contract, which the Suns have been trying to get out forever, if we're going to take on a contract like Brandon Knight's contract, which is $12 million for the next $12 million a year for the next 4 years, then they have to give me Dragan Bender. They've got to give me Marquise Chris, or they've got to give me a future first round draft pick. I can see it from the Suns' perspective that adding Jimmy Butler to the likes of Devin Booker and what Devin Booker can be in this league and what he's projected to be, that's a pretty awesome duo. Like those two guys in Phoenix. But then we talk about it again. It might be actually easier for the Suns to sort of get back to the top of the Western Conference, easier than I feel like in the Eastern Conference. Because if you look at Golden State's window, how many of those guys are actually going to be coming back? A lot of them are going to be coming up for contracts in the next couple of years when maybe this Suns team will start to take that turn. You know, they could start becoming one of those teams that are rising while some of these other teams that are sitting at the top, you know, fall. So that's something for me. But I think in a trade, I've got to either have future first round draft picks on top of this number four pick, or I've got to have Bender and Marquise Chris or some of that young core if we're going to take on a Brandon Knight contract.
And you wonder, from the Suns' perspective, do they think bringing in Jimmy Butler to pair with Devin Booker, and that's a heck of a duo for, you know, the next 5 or 6 years in the NBA, but do they think that's good enough of a duo to get rid of those other young pieces that they're building around Booker right now, like Bender, like Marquise Chris? Because if the Bulls are demanding those guys in return on top of that number four pick, the Suns might say, you know, yeah, Jimmy Butler's good, but I don't know if bringing him in and then surrendering those other young pieces that we just added, I don't know if that's going to help us out more in the short and long-term future.
So if he does go to the Lakers and then Jimmy Butler, say they make do the Lakers front office, I guess, to me, if they made a push for Jimmy Butler, they made the trade for Jimmy Butler, and say Paul George doesn't go anywhere and he rides out the rest of his contract and then he goes and sign because he'll have some money to play with, the Lakers will, and he goes to the Lakers, then you've got a core of a young Lonzo Ball, you got a Jimmy Butler, you got Paul George, and then whatever pieces they didn't trade away to the Bulls, that could look like a pretty good team right away. But at the same time, it's, again, you're competing with Golden State and you're competing with Cleveland for however long that's going to last.
Yeah, I also don't really know about Jimmy and Paul George playing on the floor together. I mean, they're kind of the same player. I agree with you. I think Jimmy Butler has an overall better, well-rounded game on both sides, but they're both, you know, touted as two of the best two-way players in the game, but they kind of play in similar positions on the floor. and they kind of do similar things offensively. I guess you could theoretically put, you know, stick Jimmy in the backcourt at the two spot and play Paul at the three, or maybe the four if you're going with a real small ball lineup. But other than that, I just kind of see their attributes and their skill sets clashing with one another.
Yeah, I think that's with any team that has multiple superstars. Is like, how do you get guys enough touches on the ball? How do you give guys enough opportunity? And in the same light, we talked about this maybe a few weeks ago when I said that Jimmy Butler wants to be the face of an organization. And if you bring in a guy like, you know, say Paul George, and then you have a young budding superstar in Lonzo Ball, how does that really correlate to Jimmy Butler's kind of legacy in the NBA, where I feel like for the most part, he wants to be the face of an organization. And with that, you're going to kind of have some butting heads. Well, it will be kind of like a superstar set lineup. In the same token, I feel like Jimmy Butler's interests in the NBA and with the team is to be the superstar, the face of the franchise. But in the same token, you said that Paul George and Jimmy Butler being having kind of a conflict on the floor. I think if Lonzo Ball is supposedly supposed to be this, you know, this commander of an offense, be this amazing point guard coming out of college, a guy that can be the head of your offense, I feel like he'll have no problem then finding Jimmy Butler and Paul George both similar touches, good looks, and it could benefit them both tremendously.
It could. I'm just saying, if you look at some of the best teams in the league right now, the super teams that exist, and the ones that have these star-studded lineups, the roles are well-defined, right? With the Cavs, Kyrie is your stud point guard. LeBron is your can-do-it-all point forward at times, small forward at times, power forward at times, and Kevin Love is your stretch four. That's how that system works. Golden State, point guard Steph Curry, shooting guard Klay Thompson, point forward / stretch four Kevin Durant. You can say the same thing about the Spurs and Parker being a point, Kawhi being a point forward, 3-and-D guy, Aldridge down low in the post. Like, they have defined roles on these super teams, and they all do different things well. To me, with Butler and George as a hypothetical duo, I'm just saying there are too many similarities. Yeah, maybe if Lonzo is the one handling the ball most often and trying to create looks for each of those two guys on opposite sides of the floor, yeah, maybe you got something. But to me, there's just the roles wouldn't be defined concretely enough. And honestly, that's one of the biggest problems Butler and the Bulls have had, whether it was this season with Wade and Rondo and who handled the ball and who does what, or between Butler and Derrick Rose just the past couple of seasons. Like, who handles the ball, who does what? I feel like that's one of the drawbacks to Butler, is that sometimes his role is a little undefined.
We talked about last time on the episode, we talked about quite a few guys. Terrence Ferguson, whose name continues to pop up everywhere. You talked about TJ Leaf. I talked about OG Anunoby. And we talked about a few guys in the second round that the Bulls could take. Now, as we've gone through a couple more days, the teams are starting to work out some players that they might potentially see as fits for their team. A name that came up for me is a guy, a five-star wing that went to Kentucky, Hamidou Diallo. He didn't play a single game in college. Committed to Kentucky, enrolled in January, was eligible to play, but John Calipari said that he was looking for Diallo to play sometime next season, not right away in this with this Kentucky team, the way it was conformed. So Diallo committed to the NBA draft. He's going to be here to stay, it seems like. What do you think about him? He worked out for the Bulls on Tuesday. He's a 6'5 shooting guard. He averaged 18.2 points per game in college. He's a McDonald's All-American. Like I said, top 10 recruit, five-star wing. Sort of the guy that the Bulls kind of desperately need in a guard that can shoot, play both ends of the floor. I think another surprising thing about him is his wingspan for a guard is 6'11". Like, that's massive.
Yeah, you have to love that kind of length from the guard spot. And I also like the fact that he's not even 19 yet. So certainly a project, but younger and more athletic. Hello, this guy certainly fits the bill. But the worry, and you brought it up, is that we didn't see this kid play at all at the college level. I mean, yeah, you can watch him at the combine and you can interview him and you can look at his tape from high school, but how much faith and how much stock are you really putting into that? I mean, look, the guy's measurables, the physicality, everything on his resume as far as the potential to be an athletic upside shooting guard in the modern NBA. That all looks great to me, but that not playing at all in college, that to me is a really big hangup.
Yeah, I think if the Bulls do take him, it has to be in the second round where it's more of a project, and that's kind of where Diallo's stock has been sitting, like early second round, maybe on an off chance of being like a late first round pick. But for me, a guy that didn't play in college at all and did not play a single minute, if for me that raises a lot of questions. But if you're going to take him with a second round pick, like a mid 30s pick, and be sort of the project for your team, I'm fine with that. Like, he's got all the measurements. He's got all the athletic ability that the Bulls front office has talked about that they've wanted. So if he's going to be your second round option, that's fine with me if he's there. And the Bulls have been good about that, though, which is weird. The Bulls can't, for some reason, develop their top draft picks, but they have this notion for being able to take guys late in the first round, early in the second round, and develop into good role players with the team, which in an essence would be what Diallo would fit for the Bulls. So interesting that the Bulls worked him out. And I think maybe if his stock stays between 30 and 40, that'll be more of a conversation to be had. But like you said, there is a lot of scares with him not playing a minute in college at Kentucky.
Yeah. And just to make everybody perfectly aware of just how athletically gifted this kid is, I mean, he had the best vertical leap at the combine, 44.5. Second, he came in second in the shuttle run, 2.79. Third in the three-quarter court sprint at 3.11. Obviously, the athleticism and the potential are there. And like you said, if this guy is there at 38 when the Bulls are taking that pick from the Kings, yeah, maybe. I certainly wouldn't be against the Bulls taking a flyer on this kid, because the potential upside is huge. But, you know, who knows? Maybe some other team sees that potential and takes a risk and drafts this kid late in the first round. He could be gone by the time the Bulls pick again. And it's certainly, with all of the risks involved with not seeing this kid play at the college level, you're not taking him at 16. No way.
Yeah. And so far he's worked out for the Bulls, who have the 16th and 38th picks. Milwaukee has the 17th and 48th picks. And then the Nets have the 22nd, 27th, and 57th pick. From what it sounds like, this is actually a really good article on seccountry.com. They talked with some NBA executives and NBA scouts, and one thing somebody said is that they'd be hesitant to take him between the 25th and 35th pick just because he'd be sort of a gamble in the first round. And what it sounds like is he'd be more interesting for a team that has a D-League affiliate. Some teams don't have D-League affiliates right now, but you look at it, the Bulls, the Nets, and the Bucks, who've worked him out already, all have D-League affiliates. So that could be a place where this, you know, 18, going to be 19 years old when he does enter, when he does get picked in the draft, could be a place for him to work and develop in. You know, the Bulls, this could be a good option at 38, sending him to the D-League, kind of being able to keep a close eye on him. And that's another thing that I do have to say, talking about all these draft picks, I will say that I do like the fact that the Bulls have a D-League team that is within 30 minutes of playing from the United Center, which is great for, I think, the Bulls execs and the Bulls to be able to take maybe guys that they want to develop in the late rounds.
Yeah,
but
great for Cameron Payne, too.
I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I guess, I mean, there is no doing that right now. But I don't know. The Bulls, like, to me, I'm trying to look at some optimism, because I'm with the season being over and having so much pessimistic thoughts in the season, I think looking at some of the younger players that I would hope the Bulls would take somewhere in this round, is there another player that we didn't talk about, that we didn't discuss, that you think the Bulls would take maybe in their first round, or maybe somebody in the second round that you've kind of had your eyes on?
Yeah, the guy that I've seen popping up at number 16 in a lot of recent mock drafts is the shooting guard from Duke, Luke Kennard.
Now,
Jordan, let's at least talk about this kid, because a lot of people have the Bulls looking at him. Obviously, the Bulls, their backcourt was a giant cluster mess this past season. But yes, Dwayne Wade's going to take that option, assuming Butler stays and be back. But beyond next season, let's all hope that they know D-Wade, bringing D-Wade in was a huge mistake. They're going to need a starting point guard or a starting shooting guard for this young core moving forward. We talked about Donovan Mitchell from Louisville in our last episode, and I really like him, and he's more of a combo guard who can actually handle the ball as a point. But I see some of those traits in Kennard as well. Sometimes he shows flashes of being a ball handler who might be able to actually play some point guard minutes in the NBA, and he's also a 44% three-point shooter. He's got some nice quirky moves in the mid-range game. He can create open looks. He's not overly athletic. He's 6'6", which is great for a shooting guard, but he's only got a 6'5.5 wingspan, so that's kind of a shortcoming. But as far as his off-the-dribble game, like, he can do some interesting things, and he's pretty crafty. I see his name popping up a lot in Bulls mock drafts, and if you're talking about the future of the Bulls backcourt beyond next season of Wade and Rondo Part 2, you have to think about taking that guy if he's there.
I'm just not a fan of the Bulls taking guys like this. He was a player. He did have a great leap from his first year with Duke to his second year. He got extended minutes. He seemed to make that next step that a player does need to do, and he played on a big-time program in Duke. He got sort of more of the spotlight when Grayson Allen was struggling. Grayson Allen this year didn't have the season that he was supposed to and, you know, had a ton of off-the-court.
Yeah, he was too busy being a little bitch.
Tripping people and getting into trouble. But, all right, for me, I don't want the Bulls to take another Doug McDermott 2.0. And while Luke Kennard, I think, is a little bit better as far as he can do more, he actually plays defense. He's a rebounder. For me, this is another trial of Doug McDermott. I mean, for the Bulls, they took the guy that is the leading scorer in all of college basketball, still holds that record, and yet they traded him away after not even completing year three, and they moved up to get him. So if you're going to take another guy like that, like, I just don't see him developing with the Bulls the way that they've developed some of the, like, he doesn't look like that type of player that would develop well with the Bulls. Maybe with Hoiberg, but I just don't see it, man.
Jordan, I get your frustration about McDermott, but this is, I mean, you're comparing apples and oranges, man. What, just because he's like a white kid, you think, and he's a three-point shooter, a three-point threat, you think he's the same thing as Doug McDermott? No, they're two different guys. They're two different players. And they have different skill sets. He can handle the ball a hell of a lot better than Dougie ever could. He has, I think, more versatility and more upside at the NBA level than Doug McDermott. I get that Bulls fans are pissed about all of the ways in which Doug McDermott failed us, or better yet, the front office doing all they did to get McDermott failing us. I get that. But I don't know how you can let that make you afraid of a guy who, I mean, honestly, like, what other than the fact that they are white and they shoot three-pointers is similar about these guys?
All right.
You can't just lump them in together.
All right, so I'm going to do a quick comparison for you. So Doug McDermott played 4 years. Luke Kennard played two. Kennard played at a top five program in the country under a wonderful coach. Doug McDermott played under his dad at Creighton. He was the Wooden Award winner when he came out in his senior year. He was the Naismith Award winner. He won name an award in his senior year. He won it. In his final season, Doug McDermott in his final season at Creighton averaged 26.7 points per game. I mean, coming into college in his freshman year, he averaged 15 points per game, jumped up to 22.9 and elevated his game. He was the conference player 3 years in a row. And I look at Luke Kennard, he's only got 2 years of experience at Duke. He went from 11.8 points per game to 19.5. That's a pretty big jump for Luke Kennard. I see it. But I'm also looking at, like, field goal percentage and shots that he took. So Doug McDermott was a 53% shooter, a 45% shooter from three, while Luke Kennard, he was only a 43% shooter and 48%. I mean, there's a slight little difference, but for me, if Doug McDermott didn't work out in the same sense, and they look like the same players to me with the same type of skill set. I'll give Luke Kennard a little bit better defense, but when I'm looking at these stats, if they couldn't work out with Doug McDermott with being a legit scorer, how do you expect to develop a guy like Luke Kennard? I just don't see it.
Well, all right, look, I'm not saying this is like my number one pick as far as who might be there at 16 and who I want the Bulls to take. I'm just saying, for a team that is in desperate need of shooting and is going to have an emptier backcourt a year from now when Wade and Rondo both leave, he's an option. And I don't think that the comparison to just lump him in and say, oh, he's Doug McDermott 2.0 is fair, because you're splitting hairs with those shooting percentages. And like I said before, he can do things on the floor with the ball that Doug McDermott could not do. And he also is 2 years younger than McDermott was when McDermott came to the NBA. And that's what the Bulls are looking for, right? Youth and shooting. He offers both of those things. That's all I'll say.
It's time to log off. The worst takes on social media of the week, exposed by Jordan and Matt. From the hot take kingdom that is Twitter, we kindly ask you to log off.
All right, Jordan, I'm sure you saw this happen on Wednesday morning. The most annoying man in the world, LeVar Ball, was on Colin Cowherd's show, and they were talking about his big baller brand in the shoes, and Colin Cowherd's sidekick slash co-host, what's her name? Christine Leahy, right, was trying to, you know, prod and poke LeVar a little bit about, hey, how many of these shoes have you sold? And LeVar essentially cast her off, said, stay in your lane, refused to make eye contact with her, and constantly just, I mean, he was essentially verbally berating her for not being credible and not being worthwhile enough to listen to or converse with.
Boss, have you sold any shoes yet?
Yeah, I've sold a good amount to me. Like I said, there's different amounts.
How many?
Stay in your lane.
Anyway, calling her like I was telling you, man. I'm just curious.
I don't even worry about her over there.
Like,
every
why
time
not?
She scares me to death.
I think that's kind of disrespectful.
So she's a reporter. Her job is to probe.
She can report to whoever she wants behind her.
I'm talking to you, Colin. Well, what is your problem with me?
Hey, my problem is you are a hater.
Why?
I would never wear a big baller shirt. But
no,
good.
I didn't
don't
say
even
that.
Talk to me. But I heard you say I'm not even worried about it.
I said that I wouldn't wear something that
it
like
says
a woman.
Big baller. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
With all due respect, you're a great reporter, just not reporting on me.
I have a right to say what
you
shirt I would and wouldn't wear.
Uh-oh, welcome to Big Baller Zone.
And it was horribly offensive. And then on top of that, when Colin Cowherd brought up something that Jason Whitlock said, the two of them who co-host the show together, LeVar Ball said, well, Jason Whitlock, you know, he's overweight. The only thing he's allowed to comment on is snacks.
And like I said, and going back to Whitlock, I don't think he can comment on anything but snacks.
Really? I hate that we're still talking about this guy, but this stuff is just absolutely ridiculous. By that same logic, LeVar Ball, if Jason Whitlock is fat, so he's only allowed to talk about snacks, you, who are already, you know, always talking about like, oh yeah, I could beat MJ one-on-one and all that absolute nonsense, you were a scrub bench player who never made it to the pros. So by your same logic about Jason Whitlock, you're not allowed to comment on big ballers and NBA ballers and being a baller, because all you're allowed to comment on is being a scrub and sitting on benches. Come on, dude. Log off.
I have to say this. We talked about it off air, and I'm going to say it again. I was waiting for this day to come where LeVar Ball was going to say something he couldn't backstroke and talk his way out of. We saw him say some ridiculous things about sport, like related to sports, related to athletic ability. And for him to do this now, it was like he was reaching for things that he had nothing left to say. Let's be honest. He had nothing left that was mind blowing that people would be ridiculously like, hyping up his brand, and then all of a sudden he turned this interview. This is bad. Like, this is a bad look for the big baller brand.
For their
no,
weight?
No, that's what you say. I didn't say nothing about no weight.
No, you just said that to me.
Like I told him, I'm not even worried about you right now. Keeping your lane.
Can you look
like
me
I
in
said,
the eye?
Whitlock, I don't want to look you in the eye. You scare me to death.
Oh.
Like I said,
compliment.
Thank
like,
you.
Yes.
You they wouldn't want to work with you anyway because you don't respect women, so...
She's after you today.
Oh, I don't respect
not,
women,
I'm
but
just...
I'm the one that's married. I'm good. Well, she can say what she wants. She's trying to put it. I never disrespect women. But I tell you what,
you did
if,
on
you
the
act,
show today.
If you act like that, guess what? Something's coming to you.
Oh.
And it's okay.
Do you think
are you threatening me?
Oh,
Not for Lonzo, because we talked about this too. We said, I asked you, like, what does this do to the Lakers now? And like, now that he's saying stupid things like this, how does it affect Lonzo's draft? And you told me, you know, you said you didn't think it affected it at all. And I don't think so either. But I think for the Big Baller brand, this is a huge shot. Like, already charging $495 for shoes and then, you know, being sexist against women and saying that the Big Baller brand isn't for women.
Well, I think in order to have a successful company, you're going to have women who like your brand.
Yeah, if you have a women's company. But anyways.
Oh, so you're not about, marketing to
we're
women.
We're talking about Big Baller brand.
Okay. But I'd like LeVar to know that, you know, there is a massive market for women out there in sports. Hello, if you're trying to build a brand, why would you exclude a huge part of that market? Like, he's just an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, is he dumb? I don't know if you've seen him, Jordan, but they recently, during these NBA playoff games, have been airing this new promo where NBA stars are talking about how much they love the WNBA and learning, not only enjoying the WNBA, but learning a thing or two about the way that they play the game. And obviously, that's the NBA trying to make a partnership with the WNBA and, you know, mutual self-promotion. And while that's happening, here's this idiot trying to create his own basketball brand who says, nah, I'm just going to not market to women at all. Like, how stupid are you?
Apparently really, really, really stupid. And that's going
to... I think you're right, though, Jordan. I mean, it's a shock value thing. He's been constantly trying to find the next piece of shock value to, you know, create a tidal wave on social media. And this time, he just flat out went too far.
I don't think he can comment on anything but snacks. Stay in your lane.
Yeah, and I think this is going to hurt him a lot, and this is going to hurt the Big Baller brand a lot, because if he thinks this is going to go away in a day or two, or, you know, 72 hours, where a lot of his idiotic statements come out and, you know, we brush him off now, this is something that I think is going to stick for a while, because this was...
Well, hey, if the president can get away with it, maybe LeVar Ball can get away with it, too.
All right, if you see any terrible takes, whether it's the Bulls or the NBA, send it to us on Twitter at Debatables. You can shoot me a DM, you can shoot Matt one at Jordan C. Malley and at Bulls_Peck. But I think that's going to about do it for us here on Dash Radio. Once again, you can listen to us every Thursday morning here, 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. You can download all of our content at almightyballer.com/debatables. All of our episodes are there. We usually publish twice a week, once here on Dash, once on our podcast. So go ahead and follow us there. For Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. See you on Monday.
Stay in your lane.
Will you stop it?
Don't never lost one on one.
That don't make any sense.
I remember at nights I would come in the gym. You know, I'm thinking everything by myself, and I look up and I see P on the treadmill.
What?
Everybody used to say, who was the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best? Who did you think
was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
I ain't think about no damn LeVar.
Those are some good nuggets. Good thing somebody told you them.
That's not the first time you've said those are some good nuggets either.
The Debatables, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories of the week. The Debatables, live on Dash Radio every Thursday. New episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and at almightyballer.com.